Blog Talk Radio.
Once again, I'm Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks. This is Wrestling Night in America on PWTorchLivecast.com. Thanks so much for joining us tonight. We have a lot to talk about here on Wrestling Night in America, where we talk about the big events in professional wrestling. We're going to preview Extreme Rules. We're going to talk about WWE's UK shows that were released on the network this past week. We're going to talk about the New Japan show that was put on by Kenny Omega on Friday night. We're going to talk about Raw, we're going to talk about SmackDown, and we're going to do all of that with my co-host here on the show tonight, PWTorch.com contributor Jeff Van Drew. Jeff, do we have you there?
You got me, Greg.
Wonderful. Good to talk to you again, and thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. First, before we get into things, for those who may not be familiar with Jeff's work at PWTorch.com, Jeff, I just want you to take a few moments to tell the people listening about your work and your top three developments columns and anything else you may do for the website.
Sure. I'm Jeff Van Drew, and as Greg mentioned there, I write the top three developments columns for the PWTorch.com website. Those go up every Monday and Tuesday night after Raw and SmackDown.
Great. And folks can look forward to reading those columns. We're going to talk about Raw and SmackDown a little later on here in the show. But first, I want to start with some major news coming out of Ring of Honor. We'll get to that a little later. First, though, Best in the World took place on Friday night on pay-per-view. And I just want to go over the results and stop every once in a while, Jeff, to kind of get your thoughts, because I know you watch ROH a lot more than I do. I certainly follow along with what's going on in the company and the results and things like that. I don't get the TV here. And there's only so much time in the day for wrestling, and it's a boom period for wrestling content, which is both good and bad. The good is you can watch as much as you want or as much as you are able to take in. The bad news, of course, is there's only a finite amount of time you have to do that. So some shows and promotions sort of get left by the wayside, and you try to catch up when you can, and that's kind of where I am with my ROH viewing. But just to go over what happened at Best in the World here on Friday night, the opener was the Kingdom retaining the six-man tag titles over L.I.J. We had Flip Gordon over Bully Ray by disqualification in match number two. And this is where I want to stop and kind of get your thoughts on Bully Ray in Ring of Honor. First of all, I think it's good to see him back playing this character after a stopover in WWE where they did the Dudley Boys thing and they kind of went back to the future there with that gimmick. I know he's been tormenting Cheeseburger quite a bit, Flip Gordon certainly. Now, what's your take on how ROH is utilizing Bully Ray and his performances as well within the character?
I think they've utilized him pretty well. I actually went to the pay-per-view right before this, the 16th anniversary pay-per-view live, and it's interesting to see how well they've handled the turn, because at that pay-per-view, I mean, he was over. They had him out before the pay-per-view even started airing, just to sort of, you know, take some pot shots at WWE, which always gets a big pop from an ROH crowd, and sort of, you know, he was playing this character at that time that was this, I think they called him the enforcer of ROH, kind of this guy that was almost enforcing the fans' interests within ROH. And then they did this turn that sort of broke everybody's heart, because people had sort of come to really love that character and that role that he was playing within ROH. And that's been really successful as well, by beating up all the young guys, and specifically now Flip Gordon, who's a fan favorite. I think he's been utilized really well. And I think his character has been his character has been very effective in helping Flip Gordon round out, as we saw tonight, because it's put Flip Gordon into a lot of new situations that we're not used to seeing. He's in a more serious feud right now than we've typically seen because he is a newer young guy. And even just in terms of the style of match they fought tonight, you know, Flip Gordon, typically we're used to seeing him perform in high-flying matches, but he performed really well in a brawl at this pay-per-view.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was impressed. I like that Flip Gordon got over on Bully Ray quite a bit before the DQ finish. And, you know, that finish made sense in the context of what they're trying to do with that feud, I thought. Match number three was a Women of Honor match. Sumi Sakai, Tennille Dashwood, Jenny Rose, and Mai Iwatani over Kelly Klein and Odo Tai in an eight-woman tag match. Jeff, I want you to, if you could, compare where the women within Ring of Honor in Women of Honor are as far as development talent-wise in the ring, as far as character development, as far as the time on shows they're allotted. Can you compare that to the Knockouts in Impact Wrestling and the women in WWE?
Yeah, sure. They're way behind both in all categories. And that was really evident in this match where you had both women from Women of Honor and also women from Stardom. It was an entirely different match when the Women of Honor women were in there as compared to when the Stardom women were in there. It was a whole different thing. Obviously, WWE, in terms of both the talent level, time dedicated on the show, all those factors is way ahead of Ring of Honor. But even the Knockouts on Impact are far, far, far ahead of any of the Women of Honor women. And as a result, they're getting less time on the show, which I know sometimes you read online, people get upset about all kinds of things. People will be upset about the amount of time allotted to them, but I don't think there's any conspiracy here. I just think it's going to take a lot of time to build these women up to a level to where they look like they fit in on a Ring of Honor card. And in the meantime, at these pay-per-views, doing things like this where you have some of the Stardom women in there to carry the workload is probably a good idea if you want to get them on television and or on a pay-per-view while, you know, not looking so out of place. You know, unfortunately, when you go to a show and the Women of Honor match comes on, it's like I said, it's night and day compared to the men, and it's not a women versus men thing. It's just a level of how green they are.
And I think you have to look at it from the perspective of, you know, WWE transitioned from the Divas era to the Women's Revolution, and now the women are lauded for their work. This didn't happen overnight. Even in a company the size of WWE, where they have house shows three or four times a week that you can ply your trade and get better at, they have a world-class developmental territory where women can go down there and work. The transition from, you know, the really bad era of in-ring wrestling, where they were lucky to get 2 minutes on TV every week in a match, to now where they're doing 10, 15, 20-minute matches on TV and pay-per-view, that took some time. And when you look at a company the size of Ring of Honor, which is much smaller than WWE and has much less choice of the, I guess, athletes and the women who they can sort of build from the ground up as WWE did with some of their women, I guess it's understandable that they're still in the very early stages of developing the women for Women of Honor.
Yeah, I agree 100%. It's just going to take a lot of time. It's not even that I think necessarily the women that they have are like super unathletic or anything. It's just they don't have anybody with all that much experience other than Sumi Sakai. So it's just really going to take a lot of time for them, especially in a promotion like, you know, in WWE, you know, not everybody is known for their work rate, right? I mean, it's more of a variety show type promotion. In Ring of Honor, it really stands out where, you know, there aren't these long talking segments or things of that nature. Everything's really more structured around match quality.
Yeah. Match number four at Best in the World was Austin Aries over Kenny King. Austin Aries, the belt collector. Look, I like Austin Aries. I like Kenny King. I think Kenny King is a guy who's super underrated. I've thought that for a while now, even dating back to his time in Impact Wrestling. This match was technically very good, but I found myself, Jeff, not really investing emotionally in this one. And, you know, granted, that may have to do with the fact that I'm not as up to date on Ring of Honor as I otherwise might be. But was there something, was there an element missing to this match to you? Because it was for me. It was that emotional connection. These guys wrestled a great match, but there was just something missing that didn't hook me.
Yeah, it's an interesting point, because I agree with you that it was technically a good match, and most of the reaction that I've listened to and heard, you know, in the couple days since the event has been more positive than my reaction, although I certainly didn't think there was anything wrong with it. And it's probably for that same reason. There seemed to be a little something missing to me as well, and I don't know exactly what that is, because they definitely built an angle here. I mean, on the television tapings, you know, the storyline coming in here was that Kenny King tried to help Austin Aries in his television title match, but ended up getting him disqualified. Aries, being a heel, sort of freaked out, turned on his friend, and that's sort of where we were at. I don't know if the problem was the fact that, you know, Kenny King, despite being well-intentioned, did do a very stupid thing by hitting, you know, blatantly hitting, Silas Young, excuse me, with the television title and costing Austin Aries the match, so that maybe made him less sympathetic. Yeah, that might have possibly been it.
Match number five was Jay Lethal over Kushida. We will revisit part of that a little later on. Match number six was Punishment Martinez over Adam Page in a street fight to retain the television title. The last time, or one of the last times I saw an ROH pay-per-view, Punishment Martinez was just kind of breaking in. He's come a long way based on how he performed in this match, I thought. Jeff, can Martinez, based on what you've seen from him, can he be a real top guy in Ring of Honor, or is there just something lacking in him?
It's a great question. You know, the impressive part about Punishment Martinez is how athletic he is for his size. I mean, he is a very, very nimble, athletic big man. That said, that's not typically the style that we see in ROH, like guys that get over at the very top, a guy as tall as he is and big as he is. So I don't know if anybody on the roster, as on their current roster, as a big man is going to get over, it's going to be him. And I definitely have to say that I've been impressed with his improvement so far. I mean, if you had told me that we'd even be having this conversation, I don't know, maybe a year ago or whatever, when he was first starting to really build momentum on the roster, I would have said you were crazy, but based on how far he's come, I think it's a definite possibility.
We still have the semi-main event and main event to go, as well as a major spoiler coming off the ROH TV tapings. We'll get to that and more with Jeff Andrew right after this break here on Wrestling Night in America on PWTorchLivecast.com.
Searching for more great pro wrestling talk? Then join me, Jason Powell, host of the free weekly Pro Wrestling Boom podcast. Each week, you'll hear the latest news and analysis from me and my team at ProWrestling.net, along with other Pro Wrestling media members. Plus, the Pro Wrestling Boom podcast features long-form interviews with notable names in the pro wrestling industry. Subscribe in iTunes, Stitcher, Downcast, and all your favorite secondary apps, or visit us directly at PWBoom.com. Once again, that's PWBoom.com.
Harry Shave products continue to amaze. They are the best shaving products I've ever used. And I was cleaning out my bathroom today, and it was so nice not to have all of the trimmings that you get from an electric razor sitting in the sink and having to clean that. Cleaning up is so easy when you use a razor like Harry's. Harry's stands behind the quality of their blades, but they know that switching razors isn't an easy decision. So they created a trial offer. Claim yours by going to harrys.com/PWTorch. Harry's founders were fed up with overpaying for expensive razors with unnecessary features. They knew a great shave comes down to great blades made with sharp, durable steel that lasts. That's why they bought a factory that's been making some of the highest quality blades in the world for over 95 years. Get a $13 value trial set that comes with everything you need for a close, comfortable shave, including a weighted ergonomic handle, a 5-blade razor with lubricating strip and trimmer blade, rich lathering shave gel, and a travel blade cover. Listeners of Wrestling Night in America can redeem their trial set at harrys.com/PW Torch. Make sure you go to harrys.com/PW Torch to redeem your offer and let them know I sent you to support the show. Back with more Wrestling Night in America here on PWTorchLivecast.com. Greg Parks and Jeff Van Drew here talking the big events in pro wrestling. And we are running down right now the Ring of Honor Best in the World show from Friday night. We are up to the semi-main event where the Briscoes retain the tag team titles over the Young Bucks. And finally, the main event was a three-way for the ROH title in which Dalton Castle retained over Cody and Marty Scurll. Now, I was surprised, Jeff, that Castle had retained here, given things seemed to point in the direction to Cody winning heading into the special G1 preview show at the Cow Palace next Saturday, although Sean Radican has a column on PWTorch.com right now that explains why that decision probably was not made. Were you going into this match thinking that Castle was going to drop the title here as well?
Yes, of course, especially based on his injury. I mean, when he came out with this match, not only did he not move like himself, he doesn't even look like himself. Physique is just not right. Like, he definitely needs some serious time off, and he hasn't been a significant role on ROH television in a while for that reason, because he's so beat up. So I definitely went into this match thinking my number one prediction would have been that Cody Rhodes would have won. If not Rhodes, my number two wouldn't have even been Dalton Castle. I would have thought they would have put the belt on Marty Scurll, since he's so over in ROH, significantly more so than in New Japan. So, Castle would have been the last guy that I would have thought to win this match, but that, you know, may have been why they did it. It was a huge surprise. Every near fall, you know, if you watch the event, the fans believed that Castle was going to lose. So it was a surprise. And if that was what they were, you know, going for, then they were certainly successful. Also, just very briefly, just so I don't let it go, one thing I do want to mention, the semi-main event, the Briscoes versus the Young Bucks, this match was awesome. This is one of the best, if not the best, tag matches I've seen this year. It was fast-paced. The near falls were great. The whole thing was honestly just phenomenal. What you'd expect considering the two teams in this match.
Yeah, and I think what really intrigued me about that match, and it played out during the match, I tweeted about this as the show was going on, at Greg M. Parks. You can follow me there. There's such a stark contrast in personality between these two teams, the Young Bucks and the Briscoes, and that really piqued my interest for this match. I knew it was going to be a great match. I've seen the Briscoes, I've seen the Young Bucks, I know what they can do. But to me, the personality clash in this one was really what drew me into it.
Yeah, I mean, I could definitely see that. Just not only the talent between the two teams, as you said, the personality clash. Even the Briscoes have done some pretty good promos, just traditional straight up wrestling promos in the weeks leading up to this match that I've really liked a lot. And they, you know, I like the angle they did where, I forget if it was Mark or Jay came off the top rope with the froggy elbow to break up the pin. And he actually hit the referee instead of breaking up the pin, which then, you know, created the situation where the ref wasn't able to count fast enough on the Meltzer driver that followed. So the heels won. They didn't win in a complete, you know, BS finish, but there was some, well, I guess we'll say heelish behavior in there.
Yeah, you mentioned that, and I want to go back to earlier in the show. I mean, you had the Kingdom retained over LIJ. There was some mist involved in that match. Flip Gordon and Bully Ray went to a DQ. There was some chicanery in the women's eight-woman tag match. Was there too much of that on this show where, you know, there wasn't a straight finish to a match? Was there too much going on, too much extra happening on this show, do you think? Or did it not affect the show at all?
Well, in those matches, So in the Bully Ray versus Flip Gordon match, it didn't bother me because I could see there was very clearly a storyline reason for this. They were going in a very definitive direction. It wasn't done just to get out of a match, right?
Mm-hmm.
In the six-man tag match, yeah, the chicanery was a little more out of place there, but that match was kind of so forgettable, honestly, to begin with, that it wasn't, of all the things I guess you could complain about in that match, that wasn't the one that really stuck out to me. And then the women's match, again, really what stuck out there wasn't so much the, you know, the shady stuff going on. It was more so the chasm of a difference between when the Stardom women were in there as opposed to the Women of Honor women. So in this context, it really didn't jump out to me that much.
Going back to Dalton Castle for a second, you talked about the injuries that he suffered, how physically he doesn't even look like himself much anymore. There was a lot of buzz, I remember, about this Dalton Castle character and what he was doing in the ring. And then, you know, Ring of Honor put the title on him. And it seemed like all that magic that he had, all of that, I don't know what to call it, all of that positive buzz he had just kind of went poof. Simply put, what happened?
I think more than anything else, it was the injuries, because they just didn't do much with him once he won the title. And I chalk that up to the injuries. Like, he has not been, it's been really pronounced recently. The amount of TV time he's gotten hasn't been very large, but even for months and months leading into that. So I think it's more just a case of he wasn't able to handle the workload of being champion, and that killed his momentum.
And now we are going to talk spoilers. So if you're a hardcore ROH fan, tune out for a couple minutes while we go over some big news that happened at the ROH TV tapings. There's a new ROH champion, and it is Jay Lethal, who pinned actually Dalton Castle in a four-way match that also involved Cody and Matt Taven. This feels like it comes out of nowhere. Lethal did go over at the pay-per-view over Kushida, so he did have some momentum to speak of. Jeff, what does this mean for ROH to now have Jay Lethal as champion? I see Jay Lethal as kind of, and again, I tweeted this during the show on Friday, I see him as kind of a gatekeeper position in Ring of Honor, where he's been there a long time. He's got that main event credibility. He's got that championship credibility, even though, you know, at the time on Friday, he wasn't being pushed at that level. He was still a guy that if you needed a top guy to challenge, he could be put in that role with credibility. But now here he is as champion. What feels like all of a sudden, what does this mean for ROH?
Yeah, it's an interesting thing. One thing real quick, just for our listeners out there, if you are an Honor Club member, this match, even though it was a TV taping, this is a new thing they're doing now. They actually put this up on Honor Club, so you can watch this right now. I actually watched it this afternoon, and it was a pretty good match. Beyond that, I agree with Jay Lethal in the gatekeeper role, although it's interesting. I found out, I think it was like earlier this week, I happened to be reading something. He's only 33 years old, which shocked me, because like he's just been around in Ring of Honor forever, and I remember him in TNA. I mean, my first reaction when I read that was, wow, he must have been in middle school or something when he was in TNA, I remember. But yeah, so he is younger than we think, but I do agree. I do kind of perceive him in the gatekeeper role. In terms of this change being a surprise, it definitely was a surprise. However, it wasn't completely out of left field, because the storyline on ROH television running into this pay-per-view had been that Jay Lethal was completely dedicated to getting a title match. And as a result, he was competing in a series of matches to avenge all his prior losses, because he had said that management told him he needed to rack up some more wins before he could get a title match. So in the intervening weeks, he had been everybody that he had lost to over the past, probably not the past year, but let's say past 6 months or something, he had had rematches, and he was beating all of them. And the capstone to that was beating Kushida at the pay-per-view. So it wasn't completely and totally out of nowhere. It did make sense in that context, because that was the whole reason for that series of matches. I don't think it's a bad choice. You know, I don't know how long term they're going to go with it. Again, because I do also agree with you that I perceive him as sort of in a gatekeeper role. If I had to guess, I would think that they're going to go to either Cody or Marty next, but we'll have to see where the storyline goes.
So does this feel like the appropriate apex for the storyline that's been building on TV? I mean, is this going to be played up as some sort of redemption story on TV where he finally, after beating all of the people that had beaten him, where he finally gets to the top of the mountain and gets that title? Is that kind of what they were aiming for?
That's what I hope they're aiming for. I mean, we'll find out once the television starts airing, but that's what I would expect based on the storyline that they've been running for the past several weeks on television.
Okay. And again, Sean Radican has a great write-up on pwtorch.com, Radican's take today, really breaking down this title win by Jay Lethal and what it means for ROH and everything like that. So it's a good read. Go on there if you want more analysis of that. We are going to go to the phones right now, and 515-605-9345 is the number to call if you would like to talk to me and Jeff. We're going to go first to Ryan in Cumberland, Maryland. Ryan, you're with us on Wrestling Night in America. What's your first question tonight? Ryan, are you there? All right, we'll come back to Ryan a little later. We'll give him a bit of a break. Let's go to Frank. Frank is with us. I've got his email here, too. But, Frank, are you there?
Hey, Greg, what's going on, buddy? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I got you, Frank.
Good, good. Hey, good to talk to you again. Jeff, nice to talk to you. The last time you were on, I got delayed on my flight, so I didn't get a chance. So nice to talk to you this evening as well.
Cool, awesome.
So, yeah, you got the email, Greg. You know what's funny? As I was coming home today, I completely forgot to talk about Bayley in the email. I know I mentioned about, you know, the potential for Becky Lynch and stuff like that. And I says, wait a minute, I want to talk about Bayley. You know what I mean? So, just with the whole, you know, with the whole turn on Monday night, you know, not
right.
For nothing. I like what was done. I like what was done here. The only thing that was a little weird was that I don't think anything really provoked Bayley to do what she did. She just, you know, they lost the match and she went after Sasha, but whatever. You know, it is what it is. But after all of that, which I thought was great, then they go ahead and recommend counseling. It says, Les, are you kidding me? Counseling? Why? Because two people can't get along? Okay, so Braun Strowman tips over a car, but Bayley's got to go to counseling. And also, Sasha's got to go to counseling, too. I'm sure you saw that on WWE.com, you know, that she's got to go as well. But, I mean, it's just, to me, and Zach Hadorn talked about it, and I totally agree, that it just kind of like, the whole thing just kind of erased everything that she did as far as going after her, as far as unleashing all the frustration and stuff like that. You know, I know there was probably a different crowd reaction than what was anticipated. To me, that's not a big deal, you know. I mean, I think everybody was just fed up with the storyline, you know, after it going on for so long. You know, but also, the thing that I just thought about it today, I said, wait a second, don't we settle everything in the ring? Isn't that what Kurt said? So, if they had a blow-up after the match, shouldn't they be settling at, oh, I don't know, maybe Extreme Rules, the next pay-per-view coming up, you know what I'm saying? Like, isn't that how this is done? So I just kind of wanted to get you guys' thoughts on that whole situation, how you think it all played out.
And we will give those thoughts right after this break, more on Wrestling Night in America coming up.
Hey, PW Torch fans, it's Sam Roberts, the last professional broadcaster, here to tell you about my podcast, Sam Roberts Wrestling Podcast, every Thursday morning on iTunes, on Stitcher, on Spotify, on YouTube, notsam.com. Wherever you get podcasts, you will find it. Interviews with the A-list of pro wrestling, whether it's Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Roman Reigns, Daniel Bryan, just recently Corey Graves, Mauro Ranallo. They're all guests of Sam Roberts Wrestling Podcast, as well as regulars like Dan Soder and one of my favorite people to talk about pro wrestling with, Wade Keller. Plus, every week we do a deep dive and analyze what's going on in the world of pro wrestling. This week, with the state of wrestling. Bruce Pritchard calls it the best interview in wrestling podcasts. I don't know if that's true, but that's what Bruce Pritchard says. Subscribe now. Get it every Thursday morning across podcast platforms, or get the premium version at Stitcher.com/NotSam.
Frank's question about Bayley and Sasha Banks, he brings up a lot of good points. First of all, I want to get your reaction to the crowd reaction on Monday night when Bayley attacked Sasha Banks. Possibly the biggest pop Bayley has gotten on the main roster. Were you surprised, given how it unfolded, that Bayley got not only a positive reaction, Jeff?
I'm not necessarily surprised that she got a positive reaction, because this thing has been going on for so long that when it finally boiled over, I would expect the crowd to pop just for the fact that they finally got this thing that they've been waiting for what sounds like an eternity there. So that part, you know, in particular, didn't necessarily surprise me. The fact that it was so positive and people loved it so much, that did surprise me a little bit. And what I am worried about, you know, if they go in, like, if they heard this, if WWE caught that reaction and is now thinking, well, wow, you know, Bayley got this great reaction, maybe we're going to go in a direction in this storyline where Bayley's like the face, as like Stone Cold Bayley, and Sasha Banks is the heel. The problem with going in that direction isn't that Sasha Banks can't play a heel. It's that if you're going to do a face-heel dynamic, and the way that I phrased it was like a Stone Cold Bayley dynamic, the only way that Sasha Banks is going to get over as a heel in that situation is by whining, you know? And I don't think with her skill set, her character, her ability, that being a whiner is necessarily what I would want to see her do. So I really, my main thing there is I hope they still move forward with this angle, using Bayley as the heel and Sasha as the face.
And they can certainly attempt to do that via the counseling.
Right. That's a good point.
That they're likely going to be leaning heavily on in the next few weeks. I hearken back to obviously Kane and Daniel Bryan with their anger management classes. And it wouldn't surprise me if we saw Dr. Shelby back on TV, but Frank also brings up a good point. Why is Kurt Angle forcing them to settle this in counseling when the whole idea of settling beefs in professional wrestling is to do so in the ring? Obviously, this will lead to a match, whether it's at Extreme Rules or whether it's at SummerSlam. I probably think it should be held off SummerSlam. But what do you see these counseling vignettes that we're likely to get? What do you think is WWE's intent there as far as from a storytelling point of view, other than to be able to flex their creative muscles and show off that they deserve, I don't know, Emmy consideration or whatever it is?
Yeah, well, I mean, the first thing to keep in mind here is WWE is never consistent in terms of settling disputes and doling out punishments. Like, you know, Braun Strowman does things that if anybody else on the roster did, they'd be Ronda Rousey got suspended for 30 days, right, for doing a lot less than Braun Strowman. So, you know, I have come to not really expect much consistency in that regard. In terms of how they're going to use the counseling, I think you're probably right. What's going to be tricky with the counseling is I usually, when they use counseling in the WWE context, they've done a couple times. They did it with Team Hell No, and they did it with Enzo had to go to counseling as well. I tend to think that it's most effective when there's a humorous component to the counseling. And I don't know, I can't imagine how they're going to play that with Sasha Banks and Bayley. It's one of those things I can't really wrap my head around, because neither of them are characters that have a humorous component to their character. So that's why I'm really curious to see exactly how they're going to be using that to develop a storyline going forward.
And with that, we'll go back to Frank for a follow-up or another question.
If Dr. Shelby settles this, he might be up for the WWE Hall of Fame. You guys know that, right? I mean,
that's
he could be going
true.
To the Hall of Fame.
I don't doubt it for one bit.
I'll follow up on one thing, and I really just don't want to see comedy out of this, because while I mean, we've talked about this before, Greg, and, you know, now with you tonight, Jeff. You know, Bayley's always been a natural babyface, but let's see this dark side of Bayley. Let's see this aggressive side of Bayley. Let's see what they can do, and let Sasha be the babyface. It would be a little different for both women, but let's see it, you know, because if you go with Bayley as the babyface and you go with Sasha as the heel, that's their natural roles, and we've kind of seen that before. So I wouldn't mind if we saw something different, you know, and kind of saw how that played out. Because the other thing, too, if you think about it, we've already seen two matches between these two. I think they had them on Raw sometime around WrestleMania. So, you know, to go to another match to me just isn't...
I guess I see your point of view there. My counter to that would be, well, we've seen Bayley so much as a face and Sasha Banks so much as a heel because they're so good at it. You know, Sasha, I think, to me, is a much better heel than Bayley would be as a heel. And granted, she could surprise me. I haven't seen it. But Sasha just has that look on her face, you know, and she can portray that heel. And we've seen what Bayley can do as a true blue babyface character. I mean, she can get over like crazy. And she got over on Monday as a babyface without even really playing one. So I get what you're saying in that they make freshen them up to kind of switch roles. But my counter to that would be, I think their best roles are Sasha as heel and Bayley as babyface.
Sure. Let me swing over to the Universal title picture. I know that was the first topic I emailed you on. And this has been driving me crazy all week because I think we've gotten to a point with Lesnar where him being a part-time champion has worn out his welcome, okay? I understood what they were doing last year, you know, when he did, you know, when he worked with Samoa Joe and Braun Strowman and everybody else. It was all leading to Reigns and Lesnar. Was that the best way to go, considering how Reigns was getting over or not getting over with the crowd? Probably not, but I think we were all accepting of it, all right? And now Vince doesn't pull the trigger on Reigns at WrestleMania, and now we're wondering, okay, what's next, you know? And I think it's just gotten to a point where it's kind of ridiculous that the company champion is not there. And I don't blame Brock. You know, this is not an issue that I lay with Brock. He's showing up when he's contractually obligated, and that's fine. But when you have a roster with Roman Reigns, Seth Rollins, Braun Strowman, Drew McIntyre, et cetera, heck, I'd even put the title on Dolph Ziggler at this point, you know? I mean, you have so many choices that I think the use of Lesnar at this point, like I said before, is worn out. It's welcome. I mean, what were they trying to do? Break CM Punk's record? Was that what this was all about? I mean, seriously, you know, does anybody even care about that? So I guess ultimately what I'm asking is where do we think this is kind of going? I mean, and I emailed you about this, Greg. Maybe it is Braun Strowman calling his shot. You know, where they have maybe some disputes about Lesnar's contract and this and that, and then Braun comes out after Extreme Rules and says, hey, Brock, I'm calling you out. This is my money in the bank, and I'm calling you out at SummerSlam. And somehow we navigate to that. Do you think that's probably the best way to wrap this up?
Perhaps the best. I don't know if that's the most likely. Jeff, things took a turn this past Monday on Raw when the presumed multi-person number one contender match at Extreme Rules was ixnayed by General Manager Kurt Angle. We assumed that the winner of that match would face Lesnar at SummerSlam, although it was never explicitly said. Certainly taking this match off the table, you're lacking some major star power at Extreme Rules right now. I'm sure they'll announce a match on Monday. What's your first blush impression of that? Is removing that match from Extreme Rules, is that a storyline ploy, or was there something with the Lesnar deal where maybe he's not only going to not wrestle at Extreme Rules, but he's not going to wrestle at SummerSlam now? WWE isn't usually in the habit of announcing a match and then reneging on the match for storyline purposes the next week. That makes me think there's something legitimate going on here. So what's your take on that? And then what Frank said about, you know, Braun Strowman, should he be the guy that cashes in the Money in the Bank briefcase and ultimately defeats Lesnar for the Universal title?
The whole thing was so bizarre in that it didn't make any sense at all. I mean, the way it was, I mean, basically Kurt Angle came out and announced, yeah, we had this, you know, multi-man match. It was going to be for number one contender, but due to a cultural, a contract snafu with Brock Lesnar, that match is off, which doesn't make even the slightest bit of sense, because even if Brock wasn't, let's say Brock was never going to wrestle again, it still doesn't stop them from having a multi-person match to determine who the number one contender is. It's just a bizarre
and
nonsensical,
like I said,
reason to get out of that
the
match.
Assumption,
yeah.
The assumption was that the winner at Extreme Rules would face Lesnar at SummerSlam. But again, that was never explicitly said on TV. That's what people were reading
right
into it. So WWE wouldn't have even had to backtrack that match away. You know, they could have still held an Extreme Rules number one contender match for some point in the future. It didn't have to be necessarily SummerSlam. It could have been whenever. But I think you would have ultimately had that question hanging over the match is, okay, number one contender match, when do they get a shot? And if it's not going to be for 2 or 3 months down the line, what's the point in holding it that far back then?
Yeah, I can't imagine that that's the issue, that they're not going to defend the Universal title at SummerSlam. I agree that there's more than likely a non-storyline reason for the change in course there. For the reasons I just gave, it was a storyline thing. It wouldn't have been just such a bizarre, stupid explanation for why the match was canceled. If I had
this is WWE. Bizarre and stupid before, you know.
Yeah. If I had to guess, I wouldn't think it has anything to do with the contractual situation with Brock so much as my guess would be they probably decided to go in a different direction with the title. In other words, you know, the original plan might have been there was going to be this four-way match that Roman Reigns was going to win, and then Roman Reigns was going to face Brock Lesnar at SummerSlam, and Roman Reigns would win the title. For instance, that may have been the plan. And they may have some new plan now that necessitates going away from Roman Reigns in a multi-man match at Extreme Rules. That would be my guess. That may also, whatever change in course is involved there may certainly involve, you know, Braun Strowman sort of calling his shot and title at SummerSlam, or whether he takes it or not, having the match at SummerSlam. So that would be my guess.
Do you think Strowman, I mean, now we're talking Lesnar losing the Universal title, should Strowman be the guy to win it? Or should it be Reigns? Or should it be Seth Rollins? I mean, who in your opinion should be that next man up and be the guy to take over for Lesnar as the top guy on Raw and have that Universal title on TV every week?
Yeah, I mean, Braun Strowman has gotten himself so over that I think it's a good idea to go with him, because you want to see, is this a guy that can carry the workload as a champion? That sort of character is not usually going to be the face of the company, but he's over right now. That's not always going to be the case. You know, people just naturally have ebbs and flows of when they're hot versus not hot. So if I was going to give him a shot and see what he has to offer as champion, since he's never held the title before, now would be the time to do it. So that's probably what I would be inclined to do.
We will come back with more from Jeff Van Drew, more from Frank, and more from myself on Wrestling Night in America here on PWTorchLivecast.com.
You love pro wrestling podcasts, but you might not have time to listen to all of them. We'll help you decide which ones to listen to and keep you up to date on the ones you're missing at PWPodcasts.com. That website features written recaps of all of the top pro wrestling related podcasts, including Steve Austin, Bruce Pritchard, Edge and Christian, and so on. Check it out. It's pwpodcasts.com, your home for written recaps of all pro wrestling personality hosted podcasts.
Frank, we go back to you.
You know what drives me crazy? Why can't, if there is a contractual issue or whatever it is, okay, let's say it's for real, why can't you strip him of the title? How many champions have we seen stripped of the title recently because of injury, because of whatever? Naomi last year, Finn Balor. How many times through the years was Edge and Batista and Cena? I mean, everybody's been stripped of the title at some point, you know, for some reason or another. Why can't you just strip Brock? I mean, if there's really a problem,
like,
strip him.
It seems like he has this mythical power in WWE lore. Like, you know, he's already got this contract that is it is a contract unlike any that anyone else really has. And
right.
it affords him opportunities that no one else has. He's immune to the 30-day rule. I mean, they will do a storyline. I mean, Naomi had to give up the title because she couldn't defend her title within 30 days while Brock Lesnar was holding the WWE Universal title for like 90 days without defending it, you know? So they were even pulling off that excuse while he was champion and doing the exact same thing, not even bothering to explain it. It may not have happened at exactly the same time, but it's happening in the same universe. So he seems to have this power where he's special, and he gets special consideration, and he is a big star. He is an MMA star, a UFC star, to make it even more important.
Right.
And, you know, that's to me, almost it's the unexpressed reason that they haven't done this is that, you know, Brock Lesnar is just too important.
Well, you set me up now. Are they doing this? Because not for nothing. Isn't this making Brock look bad? Okay? Because in a lot of fans' eyes, they're going to say, well, this guy is part-time. He's making all this money. You know, he should be around. Are they intentionally damaging Brock in an attempt to get Roman Reigns over, to make Roman Reigns look like the good guy? Do you think Vince is still on that kick? Because if I'm not mistaken, this past Monday, I think Roman still tried to go with that. I think he still tried to go with the I'm here and, you know, Brock doesn't care about all these people and all this, that, and the other stuff. Do you think that that's ultimately what he's trying to do? Because I got news for Vince. It's not going to work. You think New Orleans was bad? If he tries to go with Reigns Lesnar in Brooklyn of all people, I'm sorry, it's not going to work. And you guys both could agree with that, I would think.
I do, and, you know, that may be WWE and Vince McMahon's plan, but I got news for you. Most fans don't care about Lesnar not being there very often. Look, WWE has already built him up as something so special that when he returns, it's a big deal, and fans cheer him. Fans love to see him create the kind of destruction that he creates, like on a Braun Strowman-type level. And they're willing to forgive. And I think there's a percentage of the people out there that's saying, hey, if Brock Lesnar can get this kind of deal from WWE, he should do it. Most wrestlers there are treated like indentured servants and are certainly not paid commensurate to their value to WWE. Or, you know, they're treated like a cog in a machine. Brock Lesnar is the guy who goes above that. And if he can get a contract where he's getting paid millions of dollars to work a few limited dates, I mean, that's every fan's dream, probably, to get that kind of deal.
Yeah.
So I don't think fans, the majority of them, look at Brock Lesnar as some kind of traitor or as some kind of, you know, he's not bound down to the WWE's machine. And I think they respect him for it. Jeff, do you see it the same way?
I'd put it this way. I think that the lines that Roman Reigns talked about,
Jeff, I can't hear you. I'm hearing a lot of wind or static or something.
I don't know. Let me see. Better?
Okay, it's gone. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I think that the promos that Roman Reigns has been cutting where Brock Lesnar, you know, doesn't care about the fans, that's why he doesn't show up regularly, et cetera, et cetera. I do think that that's been somewhat effective in diminishing Brock Lesnar. However, I don't think it is, on the flip side, successful in terms of building up Roman Reigns. If anything, I think it's just going to make the fans less interested in seeing those two face off altogether.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting because you can say that WWE is trying to devalue Brock, but when it comes time to go to the negotiating table, I don't think they're going to let him get away to UFC very easily. I think they're going to still want a piece of the Brock Lesnar pie. Frank, back to you. What else do you have for us?
I'll be quick as the natives are getting restless. Is it okay if I ask about Impact? Are you guys talking about Impact this week? Or,
absolutely. Well, that's on my schedule to get to at some point on the show.
Real quick, what do you think is going on with Madison Rayne? Now, I'm about almost a year into watching, so now I'm kind of getting my sea legs with the show. I think it's been kind of interesting how she's been getting wins over Tessa and over Taya, and now she's got the title match, at Slammiversary. What do you think is the deal with that? Do you think it's really just kind of a way to get Sue Young over, or are they actually interested in giving Madison a title run? I know she's a five-time champ. I mean, I watched a little bit of TNA over the years, so I know who she is and stuff like that. But what do you think the game plan is? And now what do you think with Allie showing up, Thursday night, how do you think that factors in? Do you think we're getting the match that you love so much, Greg, the triple threat match? I know that's your favorite thing in the world.
Well, I know coming up this week, we're going to get the Sue Young and one of her undead brides teaming up to take on Madison Rayne and Allie in a tag match. So that's what's coming down the pike right now. As for Madison Rayne, she was kind of brought back in the storyline where, she was brought back as an announcer, and she it felt like she only announced like 1 week before she came out and attacked or didn't attack, but came out to aid one of Tessa Blanchard's opponents, and all of a sudden, getting sucked back into the ring. So it didn't feel like this was some long-term storyline that had paid off with her returning to the ring. I think the best use of Madison Rayne at this point, because she was always kind of the third wheel in the Beautiful People, and I don't think she ever had a really memorable singles run outside of that. So I think the best use of her would be to helping get Tessa Blanchard over, helping to push Allie to the next level, helping to get Sue Young over. When Diamante gets healthy, part of LAX, she'll return to action. Same thing. Katrina is in action next week, Grado's girlfriend on screen. And, there are a lot of young, hungry women on the Impact roster. Taya Valkyrie is another one. So Madison Rayne can still be in that veteran presence position where she's used to put people over, and she's used to kind of help the Knockouts division and help give some credibility as a veteran presence. Jeff, I'll go to you. I don't know how up to date you are on Impact and everything Impact Wrestling, but Madison Rayne's role in Impact, if you've got any thoughts on that.
Yeah, so when it comes to me and Impact Wrestling, I'm in a similar situation to you with ROH Wrestling. I actually have not seen this week's episode. I do keep up with Impact intermittently, but I'm not well enough caught up this week to really give an informed opinion there.
Okay, I'll put you down for a no comment then.
There you go.
All right, Frank, it's good to talk to you, and hope to hear from you again next week.
Absolutely, Greg. Have a good night. Jeff, good talking to you, buddy.
Thanks.
Take care.
And as Frank signs off, a reminder that 515-605-9345 can get you a ticket to Talk Wrestling with Jeff Van Drew and I, PWTorch.com contributor Jeff Van Drew, and PWTorch columnist Greg Parks here with you on Wrestling Night in America on PWTorchLivecast.com. Let's go to see if Ryan is back here. Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland. Ryan, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Ryan, what do you got for us tonight?
Okay. My first question for you is, I saw Lord Humongous last night, and supposedly he is the Lucha Pride World Champion. He had a successful title defense against a wrestler named G Postal. So my question is, have you ever heard of this Lucha Pride organization?
I have not. Jeff, are you familiar with Lucha Pride?
I am not either.
Now, Ryan, you called in to ask about Lord Humongous a couple weeks ago. Were you able to identify this version of Lord Humongous?
I was not, but it definitely wasn't Sid because he had a lot of tattoos on his arms. So it's still a mystery on who this man is. He's very large. He's probably around 6'9" or 6'8". Because he towered over... G Postal, who was probably about 6'4", 6'5". So
okay.
I don't think anyone can just play the character. I think it has to be Ruther who plays this character.
Well, yes, the name, it's right in the name, Humongous. So I would have to assume it would be someone of large proportions.
The second question is, I was talking to a stripper last night, and she said she was in a movie that's being produced. It's to be about a groundskeeper that goes to wrestling school. He gets kicked out of wrestling school, and he goes on, like, a rampage and starts killing, like, the people that got him kicked out of wrestling school.
Mm.
And it stars Rene Dupree and Sandman and OGB. So I'm wondering if you've heard anything about this interesting movie.
Interesting is a good word for it. Ryan, you know, you have the questions that stump me every week, and I am not familiar with this movie. I could do a quick IMDb check, but this may be a movie that flies under the radar of even IMDb. This sounds like a classic B-movie release. Jeff, I hope that you will track down this movie when it's released and come on Wrestling Night America and review it for us.
Yeah, I'm going to have to do some research on that one. I have not heard anything about that. But if you just told me the plot of that movie and asked me to guess what wrestlers were in it, Sandman would be high on the list.
Yes, absolutely. Ryan, one more for us tonight.
Yeah, I guess final question would be, you possibly see Bobby Lashley finally getting a huge push and beating Roman Reigns at this pay-per-view and going on to be the WWE World Champion, possibly being, I would think, the first black WWE Champion, even though people say, you know, The Rock was the first one. I think I consider him to be mixed, since, you know, his mom was Hawaiian and Booker T was champion, but that was like a secondary title because it was like,
Ryan, thanks for the call. And here's a question I can actually answer. Jeff, Lashley versus Roman Reigns. If it happens at Extreme Rules, is there any way you see Lashley going over, or in the alternative, if that match doesn't take place, any scenario where Lashley is the one who beats Brock Lesnar for the Universal title?
That's a really interesting question, because the thing, you know, obviously this whole Roman Reigns thing has been going on for years on end, and, you know, WWE has been very, very stubborn about insisting that this is the direction that they're going. So normally my inclination would be to say no. However, from everything that I've ever read on the topic, if there's any guy that Vince McMahon has loved throughout the years as much as Roman Reigns, it's Bobby Lashley. So if there's any guy that could convince them to change directions, I would think it would be him. But ultimately, I can't see it happening. I would think with everything that they've invested in Roman Reigns, how many times it's been evident that they really want to be proven right on this topic, I just can't see them deviating from it, at least not in the long term. You know, maybe they'll go – I still could see potentially them doing Braun Strowman in the short term first and then going back to the Roman Reigns thing maybe. But over the long term, I still think it's got to be Roman Reigns. And as a result, in terms of any feud between Roman Reigns and Bobby Lashley, I see Roman Reigns going over.
When Lashley first came in, did you think that WWE had big plans for him? And then this Sami Zayn feud kind of crushed the idea that Lashley could be a big time player? Or do you think they just kind of brought him in to be a utility guy?
When he first came in, I thought they did have big plans for him because I did actually watch him in Impact. And he really came across, I thought, really well in Impact. Excuse me. So based on his prior history with WWE and the fact that he really was able to sort of up his charisma game, I'll say, in Impact and become more of a star there, my guess was that they had big plans for him. I was surprised by the Sami Zayn feud. I don't really know what the thinking was there, why they did it, why they went in that direction, but it certainly did seem to cool him off and definitely makes me think that maybe they were just thinking about more of a mid-card role for him.
When we come back, we'll talk the WWE UK Network show, and we'll hit on 205 Live, NXT, and some other big shows happening in the world of professional wrestling. Don't go away. This is Wrestling Night in America on PWTorchLivecast.com.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan, but you might like MMA too. And if so, check out our sister site, MMATorch.com, with live fight event coverage, including UFC pay-per-views, previews of all UFC and Bellator events, the daily news digest, exclusive columns, flashbacks, and much more. Check it out. If you're a fan of MMA, you'll be a fan of MMATorch.com.
Jeff Bandrew and Greg Parks back here with you on Wrestling Night in America for Sunday, July 1st, 2018. And we now move on to the WWE UK Network show. The big news there, of course, was WWE announcing that NXT was going to have a UK brand specific to the UK that was going to start holding shows coming up in the next few months. This WWE UK show was a tournament to determine the number one contender to Pete Dunne's NXT UK title. It was released part one on Monday and part two on Tuesday of this past week. Some notes coming out of this show was Pete Dunne over Zach Gibson to retain the NXT UK title after Zach Gibson had won the tournament. Mustache Mountain won the NXT tag titles from the Undisputed Era on this show, and we had Shayna Baszler over Toni Storm via countout taking the NXT Women's Championship. Jeff, if you got a chance to watch both nights of this show, what was your overall opinion, and did anyone in particular stand out to you from the UK folks?
What really stood out to me more than any one person was just honestly the enthusiasm of the crowd, particularly on the Mustache Mountain victory. I don't know if it was just the way it was mic'd, but it was like, you know, the Rock versus Hulk Hogan in there or something. It was tremendous enthusiasm, which I think certainly is going to bode well for the, you know, NXT UK brand.
Yeah, and the crowd was fantastic. It was an intimate atmosphere. They were into almost everything on over the two nights. So that was certainly a positive, and it made some matches that would have otherwise been just okay. I think it brought up the I don't know if quality is the right word, but as a viewer watching, it certainly got me more invested and more interested in the show. And in the matches, rather. I wanted to ask you about Shayna Baszler beating Toni Storm by countout. I thought that was an interesting result. Baszler has been plowing over so many people. It only made sense for a non-NXT contracted wrestler in Toni Storm to end up losing to Baszler. But to lose by countout was surprising. And I've seen some people suggest that going to be the standard bearer in the women's division for the UK brand. So they didn't want to have her lose too decisively to Baszler. With the Mae Young Classic coming up, Toni Storm may play a major part in there, and they don't want to have her lose decisively to Shayna Baszler. Were you surprised that was the result, that she lost by countout? And, you know, I'm a big fan of Toni Storm. I think she could be plugged into the NXT brand right away. Do you think this is a sign that they have plans for her in some capacity?
Yeah, my guess based on the result was that they're going to at least to start with use her as the linchpin of the NXT UK brand, which kind of makes sense. Even if you believe she's ready, she'll be ready very quickly to move beyond that either to the, I don't know exactly how they're going to play being in NXT UK versus NXT United States. We'll see once NXT UK starts, but well, even if you think she's going to be ready to move beyond even NXT altogether to the main roster very quickly, I think it would be a really good thing for their women's division over there to get it established, to have someone like her holding the title to begin with.
And you brought up a really interesting point about this UK division. Is it going to be portrayed as equal to the, I guess for lack of a better term, North American NXT version, you know? Or is
right.
it going to be like UK NXT, and then if you do really well, you graduate to NXT, and then you go to the main roster? It's going to be interesting how they play that. Like, you know, if Pete Dunne and Tyler Bate are the big stars of NXT UK, are they going to make appearances in regular NXT? And if so, what's their role? You know, you don't want to have them just get come over and get beaten on NXT TV, because I think that lessens their impact on the UK version. So it's going to be really interesting to see how WWE portrays one versus the other, I think.
Yeah, I agree. If I had to guess, and this really is just a guess at this point because the NXT UK shows haven't even really started yet, I think it will almost be a the NXT, the plain NXT titles, like the NXT Championship, the NXT Tag titles, and the NXT Women's title will almost be like NWA titles, where in theory a UK person could come over to the tapings in Orlando, compete for that title, and win it, you know. And then my guess would be everything else would be kept sort of separate. So you'd have the two separate NXT brands going on, but we may occasionally see UK wrestlers come over to the US, compete for the titles, win, just like Mustache Mountain now has the NXT tag titles, despite the fact that I presume they're going to be on NXT UK once that starts up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this was... this tournament was good. I don't think it was as necessarily groundbreaking as the first one. I think a year and a half ago, maybe, when they had the first one. So it's going to be interesting to see how this UK show is used to compare to the quote unquote regular NXT. I don't even know how to differentiate them at this point. You know, it's going to be fascinating to see how that works. Moving on to Extreme Rules, which takes place in 2 weeks on the 15th of July, and a couple matches signed already: Alexa Bliss versus Nia Jax for the women's the Raw Women's title. AJ Styles takes on Rusev for the WWE title. Matt Hardy and Bray Wyatt against the B-Team for the Raw Tag Team titles. Carmella against Asuka for the SmackDown Women's title. And the Bludgeon Brothers versus a reunited Team Hell No for the SmackDown Tag titles. And looking at that lineup, Jeff, there is a gigantic empty space at the top of the card. And I know that things sort of fell apart on Raw this past week with the announcement that the multi-person number one contender match will not take place. But this is not an encouraging lineup for people to buy the network to watch this pay-per-view, in my opinion. You know, you may think otherwise. What do you think of the lineup?
No, I agree. It doesn't have that big marquee match because, you know, we're used to having pay-per-views now where the Universal title isn't defended, but we've been able to sort of fill the void with whatever the latest Roman Reigns storyline was. That's always portrayed as a big deal, even if it makes the fans angry. And then also you've got the WWE title on SmackDown. But in this case, obviously the WWE title is being defended, but it's a title defense that everyone's viewing as a one-off feud, right? Either rightly or wrongly. No one really thinks there's going to be a longer-term program with Rusev here. And not many people think that Rusev is going to win the title. So that's not really main event quality material. I agree with you.
Five matches have been announced. There's room for as many as probably five more, given the length that WWE pay-per-views go nowadays. And there are some big names on Raw that are not represented here. You've got Dolph Ziggler, Seth Rollins, Roman Reigns, Bobby Lashley, Braun Strowman, Kevin Owens. How do you see this shaking out? If it's not a multi-person match, you know, how do you see things being arranged this coming week on Raw? Because, you know, they do have two more weeks to do it. But I would think that you'd want to start things in motion this coming week. And, you know, they've had Kevin Owens and Braun Strowman as kind of goofy tag team partners and not getting along. That could be a singles match, I suppose. Roman Reigns versus Bobby Lashley, although they talked about it and didn't pull through with it this past Monday. That could be a match. You could do, you know, Seth Rollins versus Drew McIntyre, since we've already seen Seth Rollins, Dolph Ziggler twice now. But Ziggler, you would think you'd want to get him an Intercontinental title opponent. So, you know, are there any other different directions than the ones I just mentioned that you see happening on Raw the next 2 weeks?
No, I mean, if you were going to ask me to list them, I would have listed all those, essentially all those exact same matchups. With the really the only wild card in my mind being who Dolph Ziggler is going to have an Intercontinental title defense with. I would imagine he would, especially considering Raw is not going to have the Universal title defended. It would be a little bit odd to have neither the Universal title nor the Intercontinental title defended. And hopefully, you know, because of the situation, we don't get like 10 matches. You know, maybe they'll give us six or seven and we'll have a reasonably length, you know, 3 hour or 3.5 hour pay-per-view.
Wishful thinking.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
I know.
I'm assuming we get, based on the finish of last week, possibly Roman Reigns and Seth Rollins against Ziggler and Drew McIntyre on Raw this week. And I think it's also worth pointing out that even though the initial multi-man number one contender match was scrapped by Kurt Angle this past week, there's always a possibility that we could still get a number one contender match in some incarnation this at Extreme Rules. You know, the possibility we could get Roman Reigns versus Dolph Ziggler in an Intercontinental title match, I suppose, is a possibility as well. You know, if they do the tag match this week and they can build something off of that. So that is certainly something to keep in mind. But Extreme Rules, as it stands, is missing quite a few big guns for the show. 205 Live this past week, we saw the debut of Lio Rush. Drew Gulak survived a six-man tag elimination match. There was a direction toward Cedric Alexander versus Hideo Itami, and Mustafa Ali and Buddy Murphy will meet next week in a no DQ match. There must be a winner. This was the first show in quite a while that I'd caught, Jeff. I watched the first several after Triple H took over, but it got to the point where, and I think I had talked about this on a previous show, it got to the point where, you know, you're coming off of, if not watching a pay-per-view Sunday night, then doing this show for an hour and a half on Sunday night talking wrestling, and then you've got 3 hours of Raw Monday, 2 hours of SmackDown on Tuesday. By that point, all the wrestling in me has kind of been drained, and it was hard to get the motivation to watch 205 Live. So I hadn't watched it for a long time before this past week, but I did want to see Lio Rush's debut. And if you saw 205 Live, your impressions on Lio and kind of the direction that the brand is heading.
Yeah, I mean, it can be difficult, like you said, especially if on top of all that other stuff you just mentioned, sometimes the Friday or Saturday before we'll have a New Japan show, right? So that even that's another sometimes 4 or 5 hours on top of all the other programming coming into 205 Live. And, you know, I tend to make NXT more of a priority than 205, to be honest. However, I did watch, you know, he looked good. You know, it's pretty much everything I would have expected out of a Lio Rush match. And, you know, the thing with 205 Live, like everything else, is they put on good wrestling matches that the crowd is kind of dead for because of the fact that they're after the SmackDown main event. You know, and unfortunately, I think that's just what we're going to keep getting until maybe at some point they decide not to continue this. I don't know if the move to Fridays and Fox is going to have anything to do with that. But, yeah, I mean, it's what I would have expected.
I know that Cedric Alexander and Hideo Itami was sort of what they were building up for Cedric's next title match, but Drew Gulak certainly has to be in that conversation, winning that elimination match. Is that something you see them going to at some point in the future?
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things. I would definitely think so. He's one of the guys on that show that is obviously recognizable, has done a good job. He's definitely benefited from the Triple H takeover of the booking because he's become less of a joke. I mean, before Triple H took over, Drew Gulak was kind of a total joke with the PowerPoint presentations and all that stuff. And they've kind of brought a little bit of that back here and there, but not nearly as bad as it used to be.
We will take another break. When we come back, we'll talk NXT from this past week. We'll also run down Raw and SmackDown and preview those shows coming up this coming week. So stay tuned for more Wrestling Night in America here on PWTorchLivecast.com.
Rich Fan, formerly of the Primetime Friday Livecast with Bruce Mitchell here. I want to tell you about my new show, The Deep Dive with Rich Fan. On Saturdays at 6 p.m. Eastern weekly, join us as we dive into a single subject, some weeks as serious as race, gender, and stereotyping in wrestling, to as fun as which IC champs could fit into another era, and anything in between. We'll have guests from inside and outside the Torch family to cover the subject of the week, and of course your calls and emails. Prior to each episode, I'll put out on social media the subject and some notes, places where you can also bone up on the subject of the week if you're so inclined. I'll also devote shows to two of my favorite international promotions, New Japan Pro Wrestling and Progress. All are welcome. No secret handshakes here because Saturday nights on the livecast are officially all right for diving.
Back here on Wrestling Night in America on WTorchLivecast.com, Greg Parks and Jeff Van Drew with you, taking you through the week that was in wrestling and previewing the week that will be. Hey, I kind of like that tagline. I may use that later on another time. Moving to NXT, we talked about the NXT UK shows that were released on the network this past week. NXT, of course, had its regular show on Wednesday. It looks like we're getting Aleister Black versus Tommaso Ciampa in a NXT title feud. Kona Reeves won a squash match this past week. What's your take on Kona Reeves, Jeff?
He's just so goofy. Like, it's just not getting over in the way that I think that they want it to get over. And, you know, the whole point of the character is supposed to be that he's this super wealthy guy that has all of the finest things, but he looks like a cheesy guy who has knockoff things when he comes out to the ring. You know what I'm saying? And just the whole way he carries himself to me sort of tends to fit into that perception. Also, the announcers, like, they did a thing this week where they sort of played up the fact that he's gotten in such great shape. And, you know, I understand that in modern wrestling we have all different types of body types, but this guy's not really in very good shape. He's not a guy where the announcers should be pointing out his physique. So I also found that to be really odd.
He's not a 2% body fat kind of guy.
Exactly. He's not even, you know, not only is he not an EC3 type of guy, he's not even like a Ricochet kind of guy. Or you don't even have to get that lean. He's not even like a Drew McIntyre's huge, but he's not even like that kind of guy. He's not a guy where if you saw him on the beach, you'd be like, oh, man, look at that guy's physique.
Yeah, the best thing Kona Reeves has going for him is he's tall. That's the best thing I can say about him. You know, this is about incarnation number 6 of characters that he's gotten. And all of them haven't made TV, but he's done some different things at house shows and things like that have not caught on. You know, I'm kind of thinking this is probably the last chance for Kona Reeves in NXT, you know. So we'll see where this character goes, but it's certainly not lighting my fire either as far as character work goes. We had Candice LeRae defeat Lacey Evans, the Undisputed Era over Mustache Mountain and Ricochet. Next week, we will get Johnny Gargano versus EC3 in singles competition. Aleister Black versus Tommaso Ciampa. Do you like that being the next direction for Aleister Black as champion?
I like that they're going in that direction with the feud, because obviously they're going to do another match between Gargano and Ciampa, but it shouldn't be necessarily right away. That's something that they can go back to. The problem that I always end up having with Aleister Black, and this isn't necessarily his fault, he's been champion during a time where there's always something else going on that sucks out all of the oxygen, right? So the classic example was, for a large part of the time that he's been champion, Gargano Ciampa has been the big thing that everyone cares about, right? That's been the last two main events. And even in terms of his title matches, I always tend to come away from, even if it's a good match, I tend to come away from it more impressed by the other guy, Velveteen Dream being the sort of classic example in there. Not necessarily because there's anything wrong with his in-ring work or anything like that. It's just that you know, in the Velveteen Dream example, Dream just has so much charisma, right? And Black did a good job in that feud as well, but his job was to play more of the straight type guy. And now he's going to go against Tommaso Ciampa, probably the most over heel in the company, potentially the best character in the entire company. So I think that there's another risk there that we're going to come out of this feud not even really remembering Aleister Black so much, more focused on Ciampa's role.
Moving over to Monday Night Raw this past week, some of the big notes coming out of that one. Braun Strowman tips over Kevin Owens' car, and Bayley and Sasha Banks coming to blows. We had as we talked about earlier, Extreme Rules number one contender Universal title match getting called off, and Roman Reigns saves Seth Rollins from Dolph Ziggler and Drew McIntyre at the end of the show. Strowman and Kevin Owens, this unique relationship that has been formed, a bond, if you will, that has been formed between these two gentlemen. In his Raw report, Wade Keller made note about how he felt Braun came across as somewhat of a bully. You know, that Kevin Owens seemed to genuinely want to be friendly with Braun Strowman, and the damage he did to Kevin Owens' car seemed over the line, and it was unprovoked, which made Braun look bad. Did you see things that same way based on how that angle unfolded?
Yeah, I wrote a very similar analysis to Wade in my top three developments column that night. I agreed essentially 100% there. I mean, he acted like a jerk. I mean, Kevin Owens did anything that you possibly could have asked for from the guy. Not only that, they worked well together in the match. You know, it's not like Kevin Owens got out there and was just like, you know, not taking the match seriously or anything like that. No, they worked well together. They won the match. What more could Strowman have wanted? But he still runs after him, flips over his car. It was just sort of baffling writing to me.
I guess I'll counter that, because I think Braun Strowman is not – if you're looking for a virtuous babyface, Braun Strowman is not that guy. His popularity is built on him creating havoc and destruction. He got over as a babyface when he was still a heel doing this kind of stuff. So WWE is just kind of feeding that monster a little bit and doing the same thing now that he's, I guess, officially a babyface. He's doing the same thing. He wasn't doing this to, you know, Seth Rollins. He was doing this to a known heel in Kevin Owens. I guess my point is more of the fans cheer him because of the destruction and the chaos he creates, not because they're looking at a babyface role model who plays fair and plays the game right and plays by the rules.
I agree with that, but here's the difference or the distinction to me. When he got over as a heel for, you know, his rampages of destruction, let's say, he was going up against Roman Reigns, who everybody hated. So that's why that worked.
It's the fans' fault for not cheering Reigns. That's what caused all this problem in the first place.
Exactly, right, exactly. So that's why that whole thing worked. And in terms of his other, you know, rampages that he's gone on, it's usually been against people that have done something to deserve it. And while Kevin Owens is in the 10,000 foot view, let's say, a heel, right? He hasn't like made a turn to become a face. Limiting solely to his interactions with Braun Strowman, he's done nothing but be a face. And he's a guy that, despite being a heel, is not an unpopular heel. He is a person that people like. That's why I thought this was sort of a weird direction to go, but I completely understand what you're saying.
I, and I'm wondering if we're supposed to look at Kevin Owens as certainly insincere to a certain extent, and maybe they could have played that up a little more, and it would have felt more deserving for him to be greeted with the kind of destruction that Braun Strowman gave him, but I think the idea is that Owens' friendship, his olive branch with Strowman, is born out of self-preservation. And, you know, he kind of wants to turn Braun on others, like, sick him, boy, and don't come after me. And I guess that in WWE's world of storytelling is sort of a heelish quality, that self-preservation. So I'm possibly reading into something that's not even there, but I'm wondering if that is how we're supposed to be seeing this Owens insincerity, assumed insincerity, with wanting to pair up with Kevin Owens.
Yeah, I think it probably was, but I think you hit the nail right on the head. They didn't do a good enough job of getting that across is the problem. Like,
yeah.
What you just described would have worked fine, but then you have to show Kevin Owens backstage in a way that makes that very apparent.
And who knows? We may end up, Owens could be sincere, and we may end up getting an Owens Strowman team out of this.
Yeah, that's true too. They could become like the new Odd Couple team. Yeah, that's true.
I certainly wouldn't rule it out. Before we go, we'll head to SmackDown. Kane helping Daniel Bryan against the Bludgeon Brothers. Luke Harper and Daniel Bryan was the main event. Kane came out to help Daniel Bryan. Rusev defeated Xavier Woods in somewhat of a warm-up match for Rusev taking on AJ Styles at Extreme Rules. Jeff Hardy and the Usos defeated Sanity. Becky Lynch over Sonya Deville. And James Ellsworth proposed an Ellsworth versus Asuka match this coming week. First question from SmackDown I have is about Rusev and his title opportunity against AJ Styles at Extreme Rules. It felt to me like the week that he got that opportunity, he was going to stay a babyface because AJ Styles had some interaction with Aiden English and didn't attack Styles, which if he was a heel, you would anticipate him doing. He had been sort of babyface-ish on TV, but he was a clear heel here. Do you expect it to stay that way heading into Extreme Rules with Styles?
It's been so weird with Rusev, right? Because when they first reunited him with Lana, they made it pretty clear that they were going to turn he and Lana heels and they were going to like somehow, you know, do something mean to Aiden English, right? There was that original promo they did. This was months ago, but where like Lana's like looking at Aiden English almost like scheming and saying that there was a weak link and all that stuff. They immediately went away from that when it came across that people still really liked Rusev and now also really like Lana as well because she's attached to Rusev. So they went away from that and sort of were doing a face thing with all of them for a while. And then last week, as you said, it looked like it was going to go in the other direction where they were going to split Aiden English off but have him be the heel and Lana and Rusev be the face. And then this week we got complete conflicting signals because we had Rusev cutting a heel promo after his match, issuing a challenge to AJ. But I thought that Lana came across kind of face-ish in her backstage interview because she was bickering with Naomi, but it was kind of like a good-natured bickering as compared to the actual dance competition itself, where she initiated that sneak attack. So
yeah.
I don't know. I have no idea on this one where that could possibly be going because it seems like week to week between Lana Rusev and Aiden English, they all just constantly change roles regarding who's a heel and who's a face. And based on the crowd reaction, I think you might get a 50-50 crowd reaction for AJ and Rusev, regardless of how they portray him going into the match. So I couldn't even begin to guess on that one. I mean, I think that they will continue the heel positioning for Rusev for the next 2 weeks only because they were so emphatic about it on this week's show. But I would not be entirely surprised if they just do what they've been doing for the past 3 or 4 months and go back and forth week to week.
There's been a lot of consternation about Daniel Bryan's positioning since he returned as an active wrestler. Now bringing Kane back for a short-term feud against the Bludgeon Brothers. They have a title match, Extreme Rules. What do you think about the use of Daniel Bryan now moving from Big Cass to a tag team title feud teaming back up with Kane?
It just seems like they're keeping him in holding patterns until they know he's going to re-sign. I mean, that's the only thing I could guess based on the way that he's been booked here because the Big Cass thing was just no one wanted to see that, right? That didn't set anybody's world on fire. It just seemed to be something to do and a way to I guess, sort of move Cass up the card back when he was still employed and that was the plan. And then this sort of nostalgia act with Kane is fine, but it's a classic holding pattern thing in that it'll make the fans happy for nostalgia purposes, but it doesn't lock them into anything and doesn't really make Daniel Bryan an important centerpiece of SmackDown while it's going on. He's still disposable, you know, in other words, while this whole thing is going on. So I don't know that we're going to really get much of anything until he either re-signs or doesn't re-sign a contract.
And I'm going to give the last question to Frank in his email. It's about the SmackDown Women's title. He says, Becky Lynch may be moving in and getting a title shot at SummerSlam. If so, where does that leave Asuka? I was very concerned when she came up last year, and not that I'm a huge fan of hers. Personally, I'd rather see Becky move into the number one slot. But where do we go with Asuka if she doesn't beat Carmella? We have set for Extreme Rules Carmella versus Asuka for the SmackDown Women's title. With James Ellsworth now back, there's a chance that Carmella could retain once again without really beating Asuka in any kind of convincing fashion. That would allow her to move on to someone like Becky Lynch at SummerSlam. Becky Lynch, who's deserving certainly of a higher position on the card than she's been in. But let's go with the assumption that Carmella wins. What happens to Asuka then? Because so much of her mystique is built around being this unstoppable monster, it would almost seem odd not to have her in the title feud anymore.
Yeah, this is a classic example of everybody that is like really special and a huge star on NXT gets completely ruined, it seems like, when they come to the main roster. It's to the point where, you know, NXT is probably my favorite hour of wrestling every week. And when somebody I like gets called up from NXT to the main roster, it's less of a situation where I'm happy for them and more of a situation where I'm selfishly so disappointed because I know it's just going to get all screwed up. And I think Asuka's one of the classic examples there. I don't know. I mean, she has already done the thing where she's been taken advantage of by James Ellsworth and kind of looked like a goof for falling for it. In terms of the degree to which she was distracted by him just standing there wearing the mask. So I don't know they would have to come up with, I almost think that if Carmella is going to retain the title, Asuka should frankly get disqualified in some way. In other words, James Ellsworth brings I'm just shooting off the top of my head here, a chair into the ring or something, swings it at Asuka. Well, they probably wouldn't have a man have a woman hit a chair. Let's say he tries to give it to Carmella. Asuka stops him, ends up grabbing the chair, and in the heat of the moment, whacks Carmella with it or something along. You come up with something better than I just gave. But I don't even think Ellsworth interfering is enough to keep her strong because of everything that's gone on over the past few months. I think she actually has to get the better of Carmella, but not get the title due to a disqualification or something like that.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I would have thought that Carmella would have lost the title by now already, and here she is as champion. So we certainly can't rule out her once again walking out of Extreme Rules with the SmackDown Women's title. Jeff, it's been a pleasure. Good to have you on again. Good to talk to you. And, you know, we'll make sure to have you on again soon.
Likewise, man. Thanks a lot.
Absolutely. And you can read Jeff's columns at pwtorch.com. You can read my columns if you are a VIP member of pwtorch.com. And if you're not a VIP member, here's someone to tell you all about it. Tune in next week, 8 p.m. Eastern, Wrestling Night in America on pwtorchlivecast.com.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, this show can be ad-free and commercial-free with a VIP membership. VIP members not only enjoy all 7 episodes of the PW Torch Livecast with no commercials and the ads and plugs edited out, but they also get ad-free editions of the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post shows and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast. Also, part of a VIP membership and exclusive shows such as the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline, the 3 times a week Bruce Mitchell audio show, including a new weekly mailbag edition with Bruce, The Fix with Todd Martin that I also host, post-pay-per-view roundtables that I host, and other shows on specific topics, including the new Talking Honor podcast with Lola and Harley discussing the latest in ROH, including a review of the latest TV show. And now we are proud to announce that Alan Cunahan, known as Alan 4L, has brought his talents to PW Torch after many years at The Observer, and there's a lot of excitement about his new weekly show called Alan 4L's Pro Wrest Paradise, with the best coverage of New Japan, all of Japan, the UK indie scene, including the US indie scene. So be sure to become a PW Torch VIP member for as little as $8.25 a month on average, and have multiple new VIP exclusive and ad-free podcasts every day on customizable feeds on your iPhone and Android device. For more information and our sign-up form, go to pwtorch.com/govip, and you'll find out what else comes with VIP membership, including a weekly newsletter, over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter that started it all, ad-free access to our mobile and desktop sites, and more. Full lineup, full details, and the sign-up form at pwtorch.com/govip. Live!